much easier to tell yourself you're a good person than it is to actually be one.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a podcast bringing you the reviews, the updates, the opinions on the most viral books across the internet. I'm Casey.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Catherine. And this week we are tackling a dark academia fantasy book that is set in a world where there is a shining city on a hill that is protected by some sort of barrier while the outside world is dealing with a blight that is causing the population to very drastically die off. And it kind of doesn't discriminate on any living thing. It kills every living thing. And when you get into the city, you realize the prejudices and the anti-immigration sentiment of the city. It's very much so if it's Tehran. If you're not a Tehranian citizen, you are subclass, subhuman. But we follow the story of two different people, one who is Quinn, who immigrated from the Blightlands, and then also a woman seeking to become a high mage, the first woman to ever do so, because there's very strict gender roles as well in this shining city on a hill. And she is very single track mind focused on her goal and on her mission, but she starts to unravel the lies and deceit that this shining city on a hill has woven in order to build itself. And that's kind of where the story goes on.
Yep.
All right. Do you guys have reviews from the internet?
Yeah, the reviews were lame for this one. Just saying.
They were all really long. And I was like,
I actually found some decent, low star, sort of funny ones on StoryGraph for once.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
First of all, one I didn't say, but it just said one star ass. But there's a 1.5 star that said sexism is bad, racism is bad, revolutionary stuff. And then a 1.75 stars that says this would be a better movie than book. Pacing was weird. It didn't achieve everything it attempted. Everyone blank, 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 blank at the end was my favorite part.
Yeah. All right. Okay. I have a semi-funny low star one as well. This one is 2.5 stars, and it says, it was not a struggle to get through the book, but it was a struggle to deal with Sayona.
Shit. Yeah, I couldn't find any low star ones that weren't fucking essays or just lame. So I found one that's a 5-star, and it says, I will be discussing this book with my therapist.
Fair.
Yeah, real. Okay. Well, the overall Goodreads rating is 4.33 out of 5. Fable is 4 out of 5. And StoryGraph is 4.44 out of 5. So very high ratings. I'm sure if you've been on the internet, you've seen this book all over the place. What did you guys give the book?
I'll go first because I think I'm the highest out of everyone. I gave it 5 stars. I very much so enjoyed it. I think that this author does something that's very difficult in the story itself. And then also, I understand that people are like, it was very heavy-handed in its morals and in its like trying the lessons it's trying to teach from it. But I feel like at this point in our culture, society, and history, a heavy hand is kind of what we need to just spell it out and say, maybe racism and xenophobia are really bad and the people in power lie to you in order to keep people down. Just saying. So I appreciated the heavy-handedness.
I think Casey and I are the same. I gave it 4 stars. I really enjoyed it. I love A Dark Academia. I have read this author before. And I enjoyed her. However, I marked the page and told my sister to remember to. I said, page 55, this is what's going to happen. And I was right. So it was just like a little too predictable for me. And some parts like were very technical and a little drawn out, which is fine because you understood the magic system. They were just kind of boring. But otherwise, like, excellent plot, excellent world building, super good world building. And like, you're not supposed to like the characters. So yeah, four stars.
Yeah, I'm the same. I gave it 4 stars. I blew through it, so I enjoyed it as a read. However, I do have some critiques of it. Like, reading through the reviews, I saw some things that I agreed with. Like, it is a white savior novel. It does do white saviorism differently.
And I think that's a Asian woman.
Yes, but that's one of my sort of interesting points to ponder, is I'm honestly not sure how people would feel about this book if it was written by a white person. I think it being written by a person of color shields it in some ways from some of the choices that were made. But I don't know. She's a person of color and she wrote the book. Like, I don't know. I don't know what to say to that, other than parts of it I was like a little bit like, oh, that's interesting. Like, a lot of reviews, like, people who didn't like the book, a lot of the reviews are saying like this was written for white people. And I think that is kind of a relevant opinion to have about the book. Even though I did like it. Yeah. And I did find it a little heavy-handed. Parts were a little too technical. I liked it, but I would have liked it more if I hadn't already read Babel, which I know you guys don't like as much, but to me, this kind of read as off-brand Babel.
Similar.
Yeah.
Shorter. I preferred this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. I loved Babel like much more than you two did. So I'm sure that's not, you know, a shared opinion, but anyway.
Yeah,
I still enjoyed it.
I saw a lot of comments that talked about like that white savior thing. And I agree, there is a white savior in this, but I think it takes a different route that's not the same as like other like white savior novels.
Yeah. Also hilarious that the race that is discriminated against is mostly gingers.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was also like, how do we feel about the ginger Inuits? felt a little interesting to me. But yeah, it is. One of the reviews did say, who wants to read a book about discrimination by white people for white people? And I was like, okay, but Ireland knows this lesson well. It's not always about race.
Yes.
Also, I don't know, it never actually said, it said the people in the city were like brown haired, but it never really said they were white. They could have been Asian or something. I don't know. They did have green eyes, so maybe. But
I mean, the races are mythical. It's like a different society. So you
it's
can sort of
US.
Do whatever you want.
You can make any assumption that you prefer. Okay. So was the book more plot or character driven?
This is hard because the character ends up kind of being the plot.
I think I would argue character.
Yeah.
Because really, the plot comes from Siona changing.
Yeah,
that's true. And it's all about her quest to achieve for the first half anyway. So,
right. And weaponizing her selfishness, which I did love.
Yes.
Unapologetic egomaniac.
Yes. Yeah. Her ceaseless ambition.
How to be an egomaniac for good.
How to leave a legacy.
There we go. How to be remembered forever. Okay, first one. Would you read other books by the author?
So I read The Sword of Kagan, however you pronounce it. And I didn't realize until I started this book and I was like paying more attention who the author was. And I was like, oh. And so then I was like, well, I know she's absolutely going to massacre her readers through this process because she's already done it to me once. I really like that book. Its heavy-handed lesson is your government is lying to you.
Block it.
Yeah, it's like an Asian society of warriors who have this magical ability, but essentially they find like the lesson is sort of they end up, they're like cannon fodder. They're the first defense and they think it's like a you know, a great thing to be these historied warriors, but actually they're cannon fodder. Yeah. And that's the first book in a series that she's never going to finish. So it's not a fine spot. It's not like a huge cliffhanger, but there's definitely like a way it could move forward. And then she was like, I'm never actually writing the rest of it. So,
she wrote one book and said, nah.
Yeah.
I kind of respect that. Like, just being like, never mind. I don't want to
do even a cash grab there. It's just like, I'm done.
Yeah. But like, I'd still recommend it. I would read other books too.
Okay.
I haven't read any other books, but I would read The Sword of Kagan now that you've described it.
We thought about doing that one for the podcast, and I don't know.
It was pretty trendy a year or so ago.
Yeah.
Even though it's older.
Yeah. It had
Don't go into it thinking you're getting more. You're not.
I never go into a book thinking I'm getting more. So honestly, standalones are very underappreciated.
Yeah, okay. But it's not a standalone. Like, it's clearly supposed to have more.
It's an unfinished series.
I like this standalone, though. This was a standalone, and I appreciate that.
True standalone.
Right. Okay, how was the pacing of the book? How long did it take you to read?
I listened to it on audiobook, and I think it took me about a week to listen to on and off, but like, one sitting, I got like 50% of the audiobook done because I was just doing chores and it got like interesting. It was like the middle half of the book. It got really interesting. And I was like, suddenly I only had 2 hours left. And I was like, oh, shit.
That okay. is exactly true. It wasn't all that interesting until the middle. You had to hit the halfway mark before it picked up. So the pacing, it was real slow. And then all of a sudden there was a lot of action. I'm not complaining about it. It only took me like 3 sittings to sit and read, but there were some pretty boring parts in the beginning.
Yeah. I really liked the first chapter, which is one of the main characters actually reaching the city and his sort of like horrible, like massacring trek to even enter the city line. And it was sort of disappointing to go right from that to Siona.
Yeah, seriously.
I know. She sucked you in and then said, hold on, let me world build.
It was like a 180 reverse. And I was just like, wait, where is he? Where'd he go?
I was like, who the hell is this girl?
Yeah.
I don't care about this spoiled bitch.
Right. And I did enjoy... I did not hate Siona as much as some people in the reviews hated her. However, she is... definitely an intentionally unlikable narrator, and
you're not there are moments
right, and she's part of the reason why it did not, being a white savior novel, didn't ruin it for me, is Siona is portrayed so unlikable at some parts that it's like she's not the hero, even if she's technically
she actually did not give me white savior. She just gave me white person with their eyes opened is still struggling through everything.
Right.
Like, I don't know.
Because it took her a minute to actually like come to terms with everything. And she was so desperate to believe her lie.
That like in the end, she was still more motivated by her ego than by like helping people.
Yes. And she admits that.
Which I did think was one of the more subtle themes in the book, but was underappreciated, is performative activism and the kind of commentary about making everything about, you know, the visuals of activism rather than actually helping people. But as we said before, she definitely got her legacy solidified. So I don't know if I actually answered this question. I kind of blew through this book. It's still pretty long, but I finished it in a few days. Oh, this all came up because I was talking about what a whiplash it is to read chapter one and then chapter two.
Yeah.
And after Siona actually passes the test, to me, that's when you really hit the valley. Like, because she gets in, it's really cool to see the magic system actually at work. But then, like, I'm sure like you guys, I put together some things really quickly that aren't actually put into words until later in the book. And so then I feel like there's sort of a long few hundred pages where you're
page
like
55 and I don't think it revealed until almost page 200.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so there's kind of a little bit of a long way to go until you get to the part where the character realizes the things that you've already realized. But then after that, a lot of things happen. So, you know, I don't think the pacing was terrible. I just don't think it was always fast paced.
I wonder if people who just don't read as much fantasy as us were actually surprised by the plot twist.
I actually wondered that.
That would have been epic. I would have been like, oh my goodness. But yeah. I am really good at predicting fantasy books. So, yep.
Oops. And also, like, I don't think I guessed it as early as you did, Caitlin. But as soon as I heard that there were forbidden to change certain lines in the spell code, I was like, oh, it's for sure because of this and that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's around the time I figured it out too.
So I don't know. I think I can appreciate how hard it was for Siona to come to realize that, because I think it's realistic that you just kind of believe the best in the society you're in. But anyway, as a reader, sometimes you can be like a little impatient waiting for the character to come around to things that you already know.
Yep.
Would you watch a movie or TV show of the book?
I would. I think it could be a very interesting.
Gross.
What? Gross?
Gross.
Yeah. Catherine, who hates gore.
I do hate gore, but in this instance, I could probably tolerate it.
Mm-hmm. Like, I was thinking as I was reading it, I was like, wow, this would be a really good movie, but also, ew.
Gruesome.
I don't know that I would want to watch it.
Right.
But it would make like a horror movie, essentially.
Right. Though it is kind of, you know, very literal commentary on slavery and the cost of building a society at another group's expense.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be a good movie, but I would have to wait and see who they cast and who the production company is before I decide if I'm going to watch it.
Is this our plug for A24?
No, I think actually more, maybe something more like HBO. But I just,
I would say, what is it? Michael Peel?
Jordan Peel?
Jordan Peel. That one. I was thinking of Keegan-Michael Key. My bad. Jordan Peel. The other half.
I think I would like this actually more if it was filmed like a horror story and less like a fantasy movie.
That almost gives me like Get Out vibes.
Right. In which case I would go see it. But my worry is that this book does feel like a little bit teen, new adult at times. And I don't want to watch a movie that feels like it's for teenagers. So,
yeah, this book's not for teenagers, though.
No, it's not.
We grew up on Hunger Games.
This is more gruesome than the Hunger Games.
Sort of.
I don't know what's more gruesome, really, than children murdering each other. But I get your point.
The gore level here is.
Guys, when we see what's the new, the new Hunger Games coming out that we read?
Haymitch's story?
Yeah. There's some gross shit in that one.
Correct.
Yeah. There's some similar activities in that one.
Yes.
Okay. It's time for our busy girl reading. What say you?
I'll give it a 4, dropping from my quality rating, only because it is quite long and there are boring parts because Siona is so tunnel visioned on data and numbers and her craft that she doesn't see the world as it is. And it takes her a bit to come to terms with it.
I'm going to drop mine to a 3 just because in the category of this may not be for everybody. I think there are probably people who would start it, read that first scene and put it down. I think it's good. It's accessible because it's a standalone. It is just, it's dark academia, which is not everybody's vibe. There's a lot more thinking than your usual fantasy.
Yeah. I'm kind of like between a 3 and a 4. I might go 3 just because it's long and it is like difficult to understand at some points. But I still enjoyed it. I still thought it was worth reading. So yeah, I would recommend it to some people, just, you know, not everyone.
Mm-hmm.
As is true for most books.
I guess that's true.
Okay, well, there are many things we could spoil, so this is your warning. We are entering our spoiler alert section. If you're planning to read the book, we advise you stop here. If you're not planning to read, stick around. You'll be shocked.
Or have already read it.
Yeah, that too.
Right. Okay, so our first question is, what did you think of Siona and the male main character, Tommel?
Tommel.
Tommel, sorry.
Tommel, yeah. It was an interesting pairing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like classic, wow, when you get to know someone different than you, your eyes are opened.
Yeah.
Meet someone different than you. Yeah.
Yeah. I liked the pair and how it brought about change. I don't know if I liked the undercurrent, very slight romantic vibe.
Slight.
It wasn't nearly the center of the story, you know?
No, but it was definitely a huge part of it.
Yeah.
I don't know. That part felt icky to me.
Yes.
I will never like a colonizer romance.
Yeah.
And it did hurt this book, even though I think this book did it sort of the right way. I think maybe the romance was still a little too much for me, but I think this book does acknowledge that like you can't actually have like a healthy equal relationship in a society that is so heavily unequal. Mm-hmm. So like if Siona and Tommel were ultimately going to be like, we're going to be together, I was going to give this book 1 star. Like yeah, there's no, just no way. But Tommel does acknowledge that there is no space for them to actually be together because of the world that they're in, and that it just would not be possible on either of their sides. Like even if they said screw society, like
you can't.
Siona said really racist stuff to him, right? Like he had to like educate her about seeing his people as equals, and so it just could never, like you can't experience that.
God bless Kara for being the reality check her brother needed.
That's the best character of this book is Kara.
Yes.
What was it? Insurgency is kind of fun.
Yeah. This is what I would have done with my mother.
Right. And you know, it is nice that they mourn Siona. I sort of found it funny that or not funny, maybe darkly humorous that the whole kind of overarching point is that women had to be shut out of this elite group because women were less likely to be able to look away and excuse what was happening. And that Siona was basically selected as the first woman because she was so unfeeling.
She was a bitch.
She lacked any empathy.
Yeah. That her mentor was like, no, this woman's different. This woman won't give a fuck.
This woman doesn't care about even her family.
Yeah.
She will let it all burn in the name of science and engineering.
Okay. That made me think of it, saying family. Why was the plot point of her father being a city person never important?
It drove me crazy.
Yeah.
When I finished this book, I assumed that it wasn't a standalone up until she actually kills herself, because I was like, surely her father isn't important at some point. Like all those details should have just been cut because it did right, not.
I thought she was going to like appeal to him or something.
Yeah.
No.
Or he would have done something during the trial. But no, she just is like, hello, father.
It was very, it reminded me of Harry Potter, the fourth one, when the young Barty Crouch is like, hello, father, or whatever.
Yeah.
Sorry. That was,
but at the same time, like, I guess she didn't know that Tommel would go through with it and blow everyone up because she thought like, oh yeah, this is going to actually like bite him in the ass in the future. But he's just dead too, so.
Yeah. So I liked Tommel. I liked him and his family. And I thought it was interesting that so much of the book is written from Sayona's perspective, because she is sort of like
95% of it.
Yeah.
When Tommel's POV appeared towards then, I was like, wait, what?
Yeah. Yeah. And I kind of wish it was a proper dual POV, because I think I would have just spent less of the book vaguely agitated. But, you know, ultimately it has to change POVs because Sayona dies.
I didn't love Sayona. Anyone who loves Sayona, I question a bit, because she's not.
You need to see a psychiatrist to get
diagnosed. Yeah, she's not a good person. I did appreciate her as a character in the sense of like showing how like all the isms are all connected to each other. And then when you put down one group, you're going to put down another. And then it causes like a hierarchy of people. And so the fact that the lowest of the low is the Quinn. And then you kind of have the women who are treated like baby makers, servants. Basically, they're limited in their own self. And then she's fighting those stereotype types and trying to fight that. But also she's a very flawed human. And we find out that the reason why they're putting down the women is because the women are too compassionate to put up with the shit that goes on at the top and to know the secrets. So it's all very kind of interesting as her as a character. Because while she is like kind of like the savior complex, and you knew from, I mean, I kind of guessed from the jump when she found out that when she was like going to kill herself, she was like, I'm like, oh, she's going to be on a suicide mission for the rest of this book, but she's going to see how much she can blow up with her.
Don't forget the religious prejudice, and there are even different religious sects within like the main citizens. But yeah, it's like you can't. There's no solution that will solve everything. It's kind of the point of the book.
And it's monotheistic versus polytheistic, because the Quinn were more polytheistic and believed in like nature. They were very much so in Native American culture. Right.
But then there were even battles within the monotheistic one, which is so telling of, you know,
interpretations of Christianity. The great
holy text. Yes. And just like culture erasure was a big theme.
Yeah.
Just theft of culture.
Who controls the narrative? What gets put into history?
Right.
And how long does it take for history to be retold?
Right.
Which we is not long. Start keeping account of how many books we're reading lately talk about witchy women, though.
Yeah.
I love my witchy women.
A thing we're on lately.
Yeah.
I love the idea that the Quinn culture, though, was the women had the magic. The women had the power, but they used it to help others. They used it to help their tribe and their culture. But that was quashed once you got into the city, where it's like, no, the women have no power and the men are the ones that do the magic. It was
part of the erasure. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was very cool and interesting to see that.
It was when she figured that out is when stuff picked up.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. So what do you think of the city of Tiran? The magic system kind of goes along with that, because the magic is essentially what protects the people within this very solidified border, we learn later, because of the blight, so that they don't ever accidentally kill the actual citizens of the city.
It reminded me very much so of like the Immortal Longings city, where people are like body jumping or soul jumping in the slums. Giving,
super steampunky almost.
Yeah. Yeah. This book was like 1950s fantasy.
Yeah.
It kind of reminded me of like Wonder Woman, the first movie, where she's sort of like, yeah.
I thought the world building was some of the best part of the book.
Yeah.
There was a map too, but also you have to think about like how expansive the city actually was when they do all their agriculture and things inside of the boundary. Mm-hmm. Like it's a big city.
Right.
I don't know. It was cool. Thinking about magic was what made things move, turn on, etc. And anyone outside the city had no access to that whatsoever or knew anything about it.
electricity, all that stuff was powered by magic.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also really liked later in the book where the world gets even bigger as Syona figures out where the magic actually comes from. And she ends up being able to like look all over the globe essentially for different life forms to, you know, steal energy from and kill.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting to me, right, that like the rest of the world is still kind of nomadic. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of other cities really. And their city came from like crit killing and that, but it was so, I liked that it was so unique and it was so powered by something so evil. And it was like,
yeah,
this society could achieve this because they had this very unique power that they like were using.
And they stole the magic system from the Quinn.
Right.
There was one mention that I was upset she didn't go deeper on. And she talked about, it was like part of another sentence even like, and that's where the whatever people siphon salt from. So like they're siphoning other things besides magic, like they're siphoning ingredients and things somehow. Mm-hmm. And I wanted more on that because like there's only so much you can do in the bubble.
Right.
And I wanted to know more.
That is really interesting. But overall, I like the city. I agree with you, Caitlin. I thought the world building was some of the best in the book. And that's partly what kept me reading.
Well, it's the idea of like when you have a boundary around the city, it can only grow so far. So it has to grow up or it has to cull the herd and it has to keep the population from exploding. It has to discriminate against certain population sectors because you can't really keep up that population if it keeps on expanding. And that's why they had to expand the barrier, is because they wanted to expand their reach across the land and build more.
I think part of the problem too is it was getting condensed enough that the Quinn and the poor Tyranish people were starting to interact more. And I don't think the main people wanted that because, you know, in Syona's neighborhood, they were all in the same place.
Yeah.
So I think also they needed more separation because intermingling means more people knowing things means, you know, you're not as pliant as a society.
Right. I also like that, Syona and the other Tyranish were portrayed as so racist because I think in other books they really make it seem like, even in the Jihad era, I remember having this issue. They make it seem like, oh, everyone's so racist except this one main character who's the only lovable colonizer out of all of them. And this colonizer is a good one. And he knows that the other people aren't like that. And he's not racist. And every time I read it, I'm like, this is such utter bullshit.
The one you think is going to be that one is actually Alba. And she's not.
Yeah. So I like that Syona is actually so problematic because it's just more realistic.
I mean, you grow up in that system. You're brainwashed into that system. There's no way of knowing what's right and wrong when your right and wrong are dictated by the top.
Yeah, you learned what you learned.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we all predicted that the blight was actually how the mages powered the city. You know, so how did that feel for you reading it and watching Syona's journey to discover that knowledge?
Yeah, once they started calling that place a garden,
yeah,
that's when I was like, red flag. I was like, oh, you're culling the herd. You're harvesting people, aren't you? And then they talked about there's the forbidden boundary right at the center of the map. And it's like, where is Tehran located on a map?
Yeah. And he was like, it's talking about, it's kind of like hunting. I was like,
yeah.
I don't know, like super, super unique magic system. And knowing that even if you don't target people as your source, you're still targeting the people because you're going to starve them out, etc. So that I think was interesting is there was like, you either do it or you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And you knew society wasn't going to be willing to let go of that because they would end up being back in the Dark Ages themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Also interesting that the bubble protected them from like the cold night, you know? So it's like an Arctic community. So I don't know. I thought it was a really interesting magic system. It's really gross. And I liked that
you found out even the people she thought weren't complicit all were. Mm-hmm. There was no, like you said, everybody was guilty. It's not like there was that one person who was like, I didn't know, I'm sorry.
I mean, there was one at the end, but he definitely benefited off the backs of everyone else.
Yeah, yeah. He would have known eventually, and he would have been fine with it too.
Yeah. Right, because he was spineless. Yeah, I sort of appreciated Siona's struggle with it all. I think that was one of the highlights of the book for me, just because, like, that's when I found her the most relatable, was like, you know, she worked so hard to get into this, like, society, to have this achievement. It was her whole life, her whole passion. It was what made her life worth living. And so I think you can really feel the pressure to look away. Like, you can understand how heavy it feels for her and how much she wants to look away, but also knowing that she can't, like, she can't just move on knowing this.
Right. She can't warm her tea without being like, I just killed someone.
Right. And so I thought that part of the book was really well written. And I, you know, she has a suicide attempt, and I was like, yeah, because what else do you do when you find out this huge, terrible thing, and it feels like there's nothing you can even do about it, and like no one will believe you, and also it means that like you are part of it, but also like suicide is the easy way out because then you don't have to stay and fight. Mm-hmm. And then she eventually does stay and fight,
but then she's grappling with the retelling of her own like narrative. Like, she has mm-hmm. so been desperate for these men's approval this entire time. She wanted an attagirl. She wanted a pat on the back. She wanted glory. She wanted these men to see her as an equal, and they never were going to. And having to reckon with the fact that, like, they are monsters, and she was seeking the approval of monsters. And even towards the end, she still was kind of wanting that, like, attagirl, pat on the back kind of energy. And then she finally, like, when she finally meets with her mentor at the end, she finally is like, no, you're just trying to atone for your sins by putting me through the academy and stuff like that. And I'm no longer going to be playing your games, because you are just what you are, a monster. It's time.
Knowing that her reacting to this was just going to be discredited because she was a woman. Like, it would be so easy to write off her reaction about this. Like, it made it so much more complicated, and the stakes were way different. Did we need the random sexual assault in the library? I don't know.
I could have gone without that personally.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure what it added to the story. Other than the men already knew they sucked and didn't care.
Yeah.
It was gross that guy was turned on by the thought of watching people unravel.
Are we surprised, though?
No, but I don't know. I don't know how I felt about that part.
I didn't like it because I didn't think it was necessary. And that was one of the parts of the book that I thought was not as well done, is her grappling with that trauma. And I was like, I just don't think we needed to add another thing in this book. Especially if it's going to feel like sort of a half-assed add-on. Like,
I think it was only there to make it more dangerous for Donald to be around.
Yeah.
But there could have been other ways to do that.
Right. Like, he's a servant, and he's Quinn. So there's a thousand ways to get this done.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's our next question, basically, is what did you think of the Quinn, who are sort of this, like, it's like a catch-all term for anyone who's not Tyrannish, who grew up in the surrounding area, even though they're all part of different tribes.
I liked that even though they were part of different tribes, they weren't like, there wasn't like hostility. Like, they all kind of helped each other out. And I also liked like the moments where you see their culture come through, when like before she learns all about the system and what's been in place, like she starts to like go into Tommel's world. And I thought that was like very cool and interesting. And I always love like nomadic cultures and that kind of history. I love like hunter-gatherer societies and learning about them in history, just because I think like they're an interesting part of how we came to be. And I feel like they're a more humane society normally.
Mm-hmm.
I liked also the struggle with assimilating or protecting the last of your culture. That's something Damal struggled with a lot trying to raise Kara, is like, do I keep her safe by assimilating her, or do I protect, we are the last of our people, you know? So I thought that was an interesting portion of the story. And just how, like, you realize everything inside Tiran is borrowed anyway from the people of the Quinn, because all the people in Tiran were once Quinn. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense.
Yeah. And it is like, I did really like that part. That was another part I thought was really well done, was him grappling with, like, in order to survive, you feel like you have to betray yourself and betray your ideals, and how that lesson was even more painful when it came to who was essentially his child at that time, because you want to keep your child safe, but you feel like there's no way to do that while allowing them to be themselves. And, you know, it was, I felt really bad for them.
Then you meet the janitor who is the very last of his kind.
I love that janitor.
But then they all combine into one tribe at the end and run their little ginger butts to the mountains.
I like that.
I mean, yeah, it was cheesy, but whatever.
I did think the ending was a little too cheesy for me. Like, they basically just imploded the city, and the ending is like, they're just going to run to the mountains and, I guess, escape this horrible racist society. I was like, I don't know.
It was just like a reverse. I mean, it was interesting because it was the inverse of the opening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
However, when she grabbed the baby, was like, I got you, auntie. I was like, no. I mean, it was fine. It was kind of hokey, though.
It was hokey for sure. Right. But after seeing that much gore, I kind of appreciated the hokey.
Yeah, but after they literally vaporized the entire system of government to power the border expansion. Yeah, we needed a little bit of smile, I guess.
Right. Okay. I don't even know what question we're on anymore.
We kind of talked about it a bit, but what did you guys think of Siona's ambition? And, like, that was kind of the undercurrent of the whole book, is how her ambition fueled her in two different paths.
I mean, to an extent, I'm like an ambitious woman. At first, I was like, okay, queen, slay. And then I was like, yeah, oh, I don't actually like this.
Yeah, she girl bossed a little too hard.
She gatekeep girl bossed.
Gaslit too, man. She did it all.
I did like showing that ambition can hurt you. Ambition can rot your soul when you start to put your desire for achievements above doing good in the world and caring about other people. I actually do think that's one of the lessons of the girl boss era, is it's not really empowering for women to be CEOs when they're also getting rich off exploiting their workers. Like, just because you're a woman playing a man's game doesn't automatically make it empowering, doesn't automatically mean you're changing anything. And I think that lesson does come through.
I like the harsh lesson from Damal about, you may have good intentions, but they cause bad things in the world, you know? I think that was a really interesting discussion there about what makes a person good.
Yeah.
And you saw the differences, like, even if you're doing bad things and it creates good in the world, how is that weighed, you know? So I think it gave her a lot to chew on and really changed how she thought of her ambition. But she knew she was going to hell.
Yeah, because it doesn't matter how pure your intentions are if what you're doing is causing suffering of others.
I liked it because I think we hear that a lot in our society. It's like, anytime someone screws up, it's like, oh, they meant well. And it feels like it's this umbrella that shields particularly men from any criticism, any accountability. Is like, oh, let's think about intentions. And intentions don't really matter. Like, and your intention is just in your head, and your actions are the only thing that come out in the world. So you have to care about those too. And I liked that it didn't let her feel comfortable once she knew the truth. She had to perfectly grapple or completely grapple with the actual result of her actions without hiding behind her intention.
Yeah. We've talked about a lot of the other things on our list. Do we just want to jump to what do we think about the ultimate choice for both Sayona and Thamo?
Yeah, I mean, I am so glad that this book did the hard thing and killed Sayona, because if she had gotten out of this, because, like, you know, like, narrators of books very rarely die in books. But if she had gotten out of this situation at all, it would have completely made the book fall flat. Like, we needed Sayona to take the ultimate sacrifice.
Oh, I liked that she died. Do the hard thing. We always say it. She did the hard thing.
She did the very hard thing.
And let me tell you, if based on the two books I read, my guess is she always does the hard thing.
I mean, literally the last thoughts in Sayona's head is like, oh, I'm watching myself turn to ribbons.
Yeah, in a science-y way.
Yeah, I know, right? That was real Sayona.
When she had the perk of having downed the numbing thing.
Mm-hmm. So it wasn't as painful for her as it was for everyone else.
Yeah, I mean, I really saw no other way for her story to end. After she opened all the mirrors, there was really no way she was ever getting out of that. So I'm glad she didn't get out of it. It's Thamel's decision that I think was more interesting, because he didn't want to be like them. Mm-hmm. But it was Kara who ultimately was like, it will help more people in the long run, so isn't it worth it?
Yeah, because he does not want to be a mass murderer, but then he becomes
a mass
murderer.
And the 16-year-old's like, let me push the button.
Yeah, I was about to say, I'm pretty sure Kara did not care about becoming a mass murderer.
No. Yeah. I agree. I really liked that scene because I think it was so complicated for Thamel, and it was more complicated for him than it was for Sayona, even though she ultimately dies. Because, I mean, Sayona was also kind of relieved from the weight of her guilt by death.
And she was suicidal from jump.
Right. Because she knew that there was no way this was going to end. Like, if you have to do something, you're ultimately putting your life on the line because you're part of a society that does not want to see, as reflected by Sayona's family and visiting her and blaming her for the riots, even as they learn that their whole lifestyle is powered by death.
This is wrong. She's a mage, so she's on the wrong end either way.
Yeah, she's committed mass murder through her profession.
Yeah. So I liked that he thought so much about it, but I'm personally a burn it down girly, and I hate it in books when the characters don't burn it down, because I just feel like I don't get that like release from my own anger and rage. And so I kind of liked that he did it just because it was like catharsis for me to be like, yes, those fuckers got what they deserved.
Agreed.
But I think it also does say something about Thamel that ultimately he was like, you know, I liked that it wasn't a flippant choice for him, and that he really pondered what the weight of so many people's blood on his hands would feel like, even if they were horrible.
And it also shows that he actually lives by his ethics and morals, and lives by like the teachings of his people. And I really loved his relationship with Kara in the sense that like he kept her as part of their culture and kept their culture alive by not allowing her to assimilate, basically just like teaching her the ways of the people while also being like, you got to be careful of yourself in this city. Like, he wasn't just like, okay, be yourself everywhere you go. It was like teaching their culture and their power and everything, but then being like, okay, this is how you can subvert, and this is how you can be like under the radar. We'll pretend you're a boy because that's a lot safer than a Quinn girl. And then I love that, like, he brought Kara in on the decision, because he could have very easily like kept her away from it because she's too young to know. I did think it was interesting that he let her see what happened. I was like, maybe you should just tell her to go wait in the car. Like, let's not have her watch the mass murder. No, yeah. It happened. Maybe we don't need a 16-year-old watching mass murder.
So yeah. I did actually really respect that they culturally don't lie to their children. I think that's something that genuinely American parents could learn a lot from, because
Santa Claus.
Well, I mean, Santa Claus is sort of the go-to.
Why are we bringing Santa into this?
Why do your children?
I think there's a lot of things that American parents just don't discuss bluntly with their children to their children's detriment. And so, you know, it did go a little far for me where I was like, all right, it seems like you're involving Kara in a lot of this. But I also respected it because she had a very hard life. And I appreciated that they showed how differently living in such a discriminatory society can impact people, because Tommel was angry, but chose kind of outlets for that very differently than Kara, who was, you know, wanted revenge.
Insurgency. Yes.
Yeah. And it's not, you know, I liked and appreciated that this novel didn't show, it didn't romanticize revolution, right? Like, revolution was going to be bloody and messy and full of bad choices.
People have to die for things to happen.
Right. We're not all just going to hold hands and people are going to see our perspective. Like, we're going to have to, like, get violent, like, to be blunt.
Which Siona kind of was, like, secretly hoping people would all just be like, wow, let's change this.
Kumbaya.
Yeah.
And Thama was like, naive. No.
Yeah. And I did like that also it showed how Siona's upbringing and being one of the Tyranish kind of made her overly generous in her assessments of them, even up until the very end.
Yep. I like that her boss, Brigham, was a bad guy in the end.
Yes.
Her father figure.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, anything else you'll have to say about the ending? As they gallantly run off into the sunset.
I did like, even though I didn't like the romance subplot, I did like the idea of mourning a person that meant well and actually did change things, but also at the same time recognizing the complicated emotions you have around it, being like, I mean, she was part of the problem, but then she was also semi part of a solution. I don't want to call it the solution because it's kind of like just burn it all down. I don't know if that's a solution, but there was a quote in this book that was like, sometimes you have to destroy everything and the most beautiful things grow out of it. And that is true in nature. Like after wildfires, many years afterwards, most of the beautiful like wildflowers and the natural flora and fauna will grow back a lot stronger and healthier, because that's why you do prescribe burns and stuff like that. It's because you need that cycle of destruction in nature in order to survive and thrive. Like, nothing is forever.
So and we need that cycle in society?
I mean, not in the most violent way, but the idea that something is going to be forever and stays forever is a ridiculous idea.
Yeah. True. I think how I ultimately felt about Siona and Tommel, I think the kind of romance, even though it got a little too romancy for me between the two, I think I appreciated the place it ended. I think I'd kind of compare it to the relationship people have with their parents, just in the sense that, like, many people love their parents, even recognizing that their parents are deeply flawed. And I think that there are relationships where you do love people for their intentions, even if it's not enough. And I think that's kind of where they ended.
Yeah. People can change, society cannot.
Oh, true.
That was a good summary.
Yeah. Crushing.
Oh dear.
On that note, do you guys have book recommendations?
There's not a lot of books like this.
Well, I mean, if I'm being super obvious, I'm gonna recommend The Sword of Kangen.
Oh yeah,
if you liked this, you will probably like that.
The book I mentioned earlier, I would definitely recommend Babel. Similar themes, semi-similar plot in a ish kind of way, but a lot denser. And my other recommendation would probably be The Will of the Many.
That was going to be mine. Will of the Many, Strength of the Few.
Stole it.
Well, because the idea of, like, you need to read both books if you like this book. Like, continue with the whole series, because I think it has very similar themes about colonization and society and the collapse of government.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think that's it for today. Thanks for joining us. It's been a while since we did a Dark Academia, I feel like, so that was kind of different. Remember to rate and review our podcast. You can find us busygirlspod.com and at busygirlspod on any of our social media. Let us know what you want us to read next. And thank you for joining us. I'm Caitlin.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Catherine. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.